Why, hello and welcome. Welcome to the Peer Pressure Podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze, and I am your host. The reason why I do this podcast is because I am a champion of heavy music. I've always found my favorite songs since I was a young kid had riffs, hooks, were either metal, hardcore, hard rock, or punk, or something fairly aggressive in attitude and sound. And I am all about appreciating the people that keep that world going, whether they're musicians, webmasters, other podcasters, record label and festival owners. It's important to me to recognize what these people do in that realm of music. So, I am here to bring them to you in a different context, more than a Wikipedia entry or a press release, a little more personal and a lot more fun. I'm a rocker for life, and I hope these episodes do make a difference. Send me feedback at diane@wfmu.org, and my Facebook page is Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life. Like my page there, and I will keep everybody updated on podcast episodes in that space. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned. It is part two of the Justin Broderick three-part series. Is an interview I did with him 10 years ago before Godflesh made a comeback when they were just thinking about it. And if you did not hear part one, which was episode 130, released December 20th, go back and listen to it because that is all primarily Godflesh info and about how the reunion came about. And it's interesting to hear because things have changed since then and there has been Godflesh output. So we continue now talking about Justin as a human and his other endeavors. Thanks for listening. Please stay tuned. Can you talk a little bit about Pale Sketcher versus Pale Sketches?
Okay, yeah. The Pale Sketcher project is probably about as far removed from Godflesh as any project I've ever done is. Basically, I think. It's closer to Yaesu. I mean, essentially, it's not the first project I've done that is stripped of guitars. That's probably nothing new for me in terms of working in electronic music, but the Pale Sketcher project was basically born from the Yaesu project. The whole concept with Yaesu was for me to take essentially pop songs and my love of pop music and somewhat marry it with my established sound, you know. As in heavy, low-tuned, etc., etc. But I wanted to use that sort of heaviness, that power, to marry it to my own personal take on writing pop music, you know. What I was doing a lot with Yaesu was exploring the electronic side of this. You know, Yaesu is pretty much, it is essentially guitar-oriented, but there's a lot of electronics in there as well. And what I found, I was becoming quite eclectic within the whole sphere of Yaesu, examining a lot of the electronica side of the sound more than I probably would have wished, as in I just couldn't help myself. It's just occurred to me that I really wanted to make music that was just electronic, but had that melancholy and pop edge that Yaesu has, you know. So the idea, the Pale Sketcher project, is a way of me writing similar material to Yaesu, but using only electronic instruments, you know. So, and that's essentially what it is. You know, it's by my hardcore established fan base, it's a lot of people don't get it, basically. And I think that's completely to be understood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not... It's on a label, Ghostly International, who are known for exploring the ideas of electronica and pop and the bridge between the two, you know. So it's not like I'm out there on my own doing this stuff. I've shifted to a record label which has its own established audience of people who are interested in this context of music, you know. So.
So you're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes.
No, exactly. You know, it's out there for another another audience. If my established audience get it, so to speak, then fine. You know, I didn't really expect most of my established hardcore audience to really go for it, you know, because it's a very polite sound, in a way, the sound of Pale Sketch, you know, and that's just something I've wanted to do for a number of years. Most wholeheartedly electronic music that I've done, in, you know, over the years has been brutal, confrontational, psychedelic, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It hasn't been exploring pop and shoegaze and, you know, a lot of these genres that I'm also interested in, you know, and that's what this project does. So it was, for me, it was a given that it would alienate people who like the heavier side of my music.
You know? Right. Oh, but I love that you call it, you know, it's like an exploration in politeness.
Yeah. That's, you
know, how do you do?
That's, you know, that's another side of what I like to do. Yeah, I mean, this is it, you know.
Yeah.
It's still emotionally extreme, though, even though it's polite in the context of probably people who, you know, my established audience or a lot of the records I make, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, for me, emotionally extreme. Its extremities are in the textures, in the vibe, you know, in the mood that's created. But it's just not extreme music per se, you know.
Right. Hey, are you in your studio right now?
Yeah.
Can you just give the listeners a little bit of a scan of, like, where you're sitting and what you've got in there?
Yeah, I'm sitting directly in front of two Macintosh screens. I've got the one large screen in front of me, which is running my Mac Pro, and then I've got an older G5 under the table, which with another monitor. One of my projects called Final.
Yeah.
I've actually got in front of me, it's a new EP, which I'm only going to release digitally, actually.
Oh.
Which, when you called, I was just doing the sleeve for. So I was doing the sleeve on one Mac and listening to the EP and getting inspiration for the sleeve on the other Mac.
Wow.
But then on to the right of that is my analog mixing desk, which is a TL Audio mixing desk.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the right of that are my racks with all the outboard
processing.
Yeah. To the right of me is all the analog processing stuff, yeah. And to the left of me is my entire, a whole wall full of all my vinyl collection.
Oh, very good.
And then I've got about four guitars behind me on the other wall. Not attached to the wall, they're all bunched up together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've got a 5-string bass there, that's my 7-string Schecter, and one of my latest purchases, which is an 8-string Schecter.
What's the star of the studio?
I have a different star every couple of months, I think.
Oh, okay.
Like... Yeah, and not as in I buy another piece, but just I'll be doing a lot of work and it's suddenly oriented around something I've vibed off on a piece of equipment, you know. I mean, I'm still sitting here with my old Eventide 3500, you know, the old Eventide, you know, one of the classiest effects, multi-effects processors on the market.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, Godflesh, we bought that in about 94. I'm still finding stuff in it now, you know.
Wow.
I shelved it for a bit because I was doing a lot of stuff internally on the computers, you know, for a while, but I found that I wasn't being... In hindsight, wasn't satisfied with the sound. I've gone back to a lot of my analog equipment in the last year and a half, and now I feel I've got, you know, as close to a perfect studio setup as I imagined, you know, where I've now pieced. It's a perfect marriage of analog equipment, valve, tube equipment, and high-end Macintosh software processing as well, you know, and I've found that the best world is the marriage of both, you know, whereas I've used both exclusively in my career, you know.
I wanted to see if there was just something that you kept on going to, or if you it was more like you had like the employee of the month. Oh, this is my favorite piece now. And in writing, is it sort of you end up working with one mode for a little bit and let it expand?
Yeah, that can be true. It depends again on the context. It's like with Yaesu, for example, that is very much born of me sitting there acoustically with a guitar. You know, it can also be inspired by something else though. Which, you know, would generally be some older band's melodies, which I may try and perversely recreate, but on a low-tuned guitar, you know. I think one of the last songs I wrote for the new Yaesu album, I think I was going back to one of my old favourite bands, which is Big Star. And I think I re-bought one of their albums on vinyl and suddenly come up with recreating one of their melodies as a Yaesu song, but I reversed the melody and then transposed it onto to an 8-string Schecter guitar, so it's about 10 times lower than the Big Star original, you know what I mean? So that, I mean, that's, you know, but I wrote that acoustically. I'm sitting there with an 8-string Schecter guitar, but I'm playing acoustically and singing, trying my best to sing anyway. But you know, sometimes things will be born of literally a couple of pieces of equipment. Whereas with Yaesu, of course, I'll write it acoustically, etc. But then by the time it hits the proper recording process, it then does become very much about texture, and it does become some of its processing, you know. A lot of what I do is sound, it is production, it isn't just trying to record a song, you know, I guess. You know, quite obviously, I'm quite obsessive about production, chiefly because I feel I never get it right. So I'm always trying to chase this utopian dream of production, which I can never seem to reach, you know. So that's my goal, really, is to keep trying my hardest to achieve a sound that's in my head, which I can never get down.
So then when do you stop? I mean, why aren't you still writing the same song for, you know, 20 years?
Yeah, to be honest, I just, I quite often cut off. I've just learned self-discipline, you know, which is pretty hard as a musician anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
well, especially as a studio musician, and you don't always work with other people.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, a lot of what I do is solo.
Yeah.
Even Yaesu is, you know, essentially it is solo. So I have to just work with myself and argue with myself on a minute-to-minute basis, you know. It's schizophrenic, you know, and I clearly am schizophrenic. You know, so it's like, and, you know, obviously I do sit in the studio arguing with myself.
the angel devil, like one on one shoulder, one on the other.
Oh, yeah. There's probably a few others in there as well.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's crazy, really. I mean, if there was just a recorder in the studio that just recorded literally what's happening in my studio, then, you know, it'd probably be quite scary to some people, I think.
A few
voices going on, put it that way.
Well, we would probably have to thank all of those voices then for all of your your creation at that time. Can you talk about Grey Machine?
Yeah, that's, to be honest, I should have mentioned, when we were discussing Godflesh, I should have mentioned that was also another catalyst for the Godflesh Reformation.
Oh, how so?
Absolutely, recording that album, even when I initially started the Grey Machine project, which again was started as a solo venture, for a number of ideas I had that were exploring what I felt as a new form of musical brutality for myself, anyway, whereas Godflesh was restrictive and intentionally minimal and restrictive. When I came with the concepts for Grey Machine, it was me wanting to explore a similar brutality to what Godflesh had explored, but I wanted it to be sprawling, messy, open-ended, layer upon layer upon layer of sound. No absolutely tangible structure, so to speak. You know, I wanted to explore something open-ended, you know. When I first started recording pieces for Grey Machine, and that was when it came to me that it should be an expansive thing, literally in terms of a lineup as well, you know, getting more people involved, like, you know, of course, Aaron Turner,
right,
Isis Holman Gloom, etc. I mean, him and I had always talked at great length about trying to do something collaboratively anyway, and that really did make sense. That was, you know, the project that we should explore, amongst a lot of my usual cohorts as well, you know. But yeah, that project, as we started to work more at that album, it really, you know, it occurred to me that I was thrilled again to be exploring something so brutal, so nihilistic, you know, which again was definitely, that was around the time of recording and really getting into doing the Grey Machine album that I started to get quite nostalgic about Godflesh and started listening to all the Godflesh records again, which I hadn't done for some time at that time, you know.
Wow.
So I found it inspirational all round, you know, and I love that, the Grey Machine album, you know. I'm really proud of that record. I mean, it definitely got met with an awful lot of derision, which was a pleasure. I think, I mean, particularly, I think it was at the time, quite clearly, Yaesu was quite established at that time. Isis particularly was established. I think there was a certain expectation that any project that involved Aaron and I would be somewhat a meeting of Isis and Yaesu, you know, which obviously couldn't be any further from the truth. And, you know, and Aaron and I discussed this, you know, is we both clearly have an absolute obsession with utter brutality within music, you know. And that's what we, you know, we wanted to explore. There was no way there was going to be some easy route, you know what I mean? I mean, the whole Grey Machine thing for me is I wish I had more time to do the next record, you know, because we're really excited about the next record, which has got more people in the band as well, more people in the lineup, more guests. So we're really excited about where this next record will go, because we know it will be way more extreme than that first album, you know. I love the premise, you know, I love the premise of what we were exploring there, you know. And I'm really excited about this, the next record, yeah. Which hopefully we'll start actually putting something together next year. That's my hope, anyway.
I certainly do hope so. Then when you're in the studio, do you have moments where you're just sort of playing around in the studio and you don't have any particular project you're working towards, and then you just sort of come up with something and assign it to one of your, you know, personas or projects?
That is actually fairly rare. Mm. What often happens is I'll have something completely in mind. Like I'll go in the studio with something very specific about a specific project I want to work on, and what often happens is as I'm working on it, I'll lose the discipline, or I'll lose the reins or the focus, and then it may end up accidentally becoming something else, you know.
Okay.
That's quite often what happens more than anything.
Uh-huh.
I'm the sort of person who needs to have a very clear personal set of directives or ideas, or I need something tangible to go in with conceptually, and then it can go anywhere from there, if you know what I mean. It's that's just the way I like it. If I just go in as a blank canvas and have no real like starting point or starting ideas or concepts, I often find that blank canvas will remain empty for the entire duration of the day, you know. I need something. That's the thing with me. I absolutely need an idea. I need a spark. I need something to set me excited and get me working on something, and then it can go anywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could end up being quite literally any given project. Within reason, that is. It's very rare I'd go in the studio and accidentally come across a Yaesu song, it must be said.
Okay.
That's very specific. But in terms of a lot of the other stuff, like my more minor, smaller projects, to some extent, things can really float, you know.
And there's part two of three, going back, revisiting with Justin Broderick. If you haven't subscribed, I'd suggest that you do, so you can find out when Section 3 airs. And if you prefer transcription, on the rockersforlife.com website are transcriptions of a large portion of these interviews. 'Cause that's how I roll. Thanks for listening. And that concludes another podcast episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. More on the way. I am Diane Kamikaze. Check my Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. On Facebook, you can find me as Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life and Making a Difference. The full link to my index of shows and podcasts can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. That's a capital D and a capital K. I'm working on encore presentations, and I've got years of interviews and podcasts. So if there's something that you'd like to see reposted that you missed, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org. And be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you like it, please rate it and review it. Wow. Thank you. See you next time.